In this episode of GeoTalk, we track down a travel bug in the United States, we pick apart Garmin's latest geocaching offering, and we discover Australia's most verbose logger. All this and more on GeoTalk. Well, welcome to GeoTalk, episode 65 for October 2010. I know we're heading towards the end of the month, but it's been a very, very busy month for the Spin Doctors, and not a lot of it has been geocaching. But anyway, you'll find out a little bit more in the next episode. So, bit of news to get through first of all. Congratulations to everyone who were part of the 10 of 10 of 10 day of geocaching that Groundspeak was asking us all to do, get out and find a cache on the 10th of October. I think from when I last looked at the stats, was about a bit over 700,000 geocaches around the world had found a cache on that particular day. And of course, those of us that did probably now know that we all got a little souvenir, which is one of these new things that Groundspeak have set up. Now, I was actually approached a few months ago as part of my role with Geocaching New South Wales to see if there was anything that we could do to be part of this souvenir program. And admit it, at the time, I was still scratching my head trying to work out exactly what it is. But I think out of this little thing that popped up on the 10th of October, a lot more people are understanding what it's all about, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about them. But if you want to find out more, go to, I think it's souvenirs.geocaching.com, and you can find out a bit more about how these souvenirs work and how they might pop up on your iPhone or your Android phone or whatnot over the, more and more increasingly over the next few months. And talking about new things that have come from Groundspeak, within days of Windows announcing Phone 7, and I mean literally days, they've announced the geocaching app for Windows Phone 7. Now, obviously, this doesn't work on previous flavors of Windows Mobile 6.1 or 6.5, but if you're lucky enough to have got your hands already on a Windows Phone 7 phone, well, you can go at geocaching straight away. So check that out. That's at geocaching.com/WP. Now, a news closer to home, and this isn't really good news. It's actually some fairly sad news, but it's also a timely reminder for all of us who are going out geocaching. Just recently, two separate events, two geocachers in South Australia have received some fairly serious injuries as a result of geocaching. And White Dog Gang was the first one that we heard about 2 or 3 weeks ago, who fell 20 metres down a cliff and sustained some horrible injuries. And from what I've read on the forums, he ended up with some pretty bad fractures to his left shoulder and arm and the chest wall, and also had to have his spleen removed. And our thoughts go out to White Dog Gang's family and to all his friends as well, and we really do hope that you recover quickly, because we know it hasn't been a very good ride, and it was a very serious fall from all accounts. And then just a few days ago, Melko, also in South Australia, he ended up falling down a few metres down a cliff as well, and luckily for him, the injuries aren't as bad as White Dog Gang, but he's still ended up with some nasty lacerations and is actually undergoing knee surgery. So it's a real timely reminder for all of us, particularly now that the weather is finding up here in Australia and New Zealand, to just take some care, to go caching, particularly in some of those high terrain areas with friends. Let people know where you're going, and also just be very aware of your own limitations. Nothing is worth that much for getting a smiley. And obviously, these two individuals themselves are probably, well, they're very lucky to be alive from all accounts, and hopefully it's a lesson for all of us. And along those lines, you can actually go to the Geocaching Australia website wiki, and two geocachers have gotten together and put some notes together on guides for moving along cliff areas. So if you're coming across or you're thinking of going out to a geocache that's in an area that is listed as having cliffs near it or some steep terrain, then check out that. I'll give you a link in the show notes, but it's at wiki.geocaching.com.au, and do a search for guidelines for moving around cliff areas. Now, whenever I look at the stats of where people, how many people are listening to the podcast and where they're coming from, I'm always, well, I shouldn't be surprised, but the United States lists fairly heavily amongst the group of listeners. In fact, in some episodes, they make up 50% of the listeners. So hello to everyone from the US and from Canada who listens out. And we've got a bit of audio that comes from Colorado from Wayne. He's got a family of geocaches that are heading out, and they've got a bit of a link to Australia. So I'll let Wayne take it from there.
Hi, Darren. This is Wayne from Boulder, Colorado. I'm a big fan of the show, so I wanted to share this adventure with you. I brought my two small geocacher adventures with me. We're headed up, in Colorado, we're headed into the Rocky Mountains today. We've got a special adventure planned. We're looking for a specific travel bug that's very special. We're looking for the BJC family travel bug, TB212RH. Yeah, it was released from our friends in Brisbane.
In Australia,
2.5 years ago, with the goal of getting to Colorado for us to pick up. This was released by my friend Ben and his family.
Ben and Jenny,
and they were... I visited them in Brisbane in April of 2008 in Australia, and they released this travel bug trying to get to us, and it's finally made it. So we're heading into the mountains today to find a specific cache, and we'll report back after we get a little closer, and we'll keep you updated.
Well, we'll catch up a little bit later with Wayne and the family and see how they go in finding that travel bug that's travelled all the way from Australia. Well, now it's time to head across the ditch over the Tasman to New Zealand, and it's time to catch up with Radio Nut 50 with the latest news from over there.
Yeah, hi there, Darren, from Radio Nut 50 here in New Zealand. On the last podcast, I reported a series of problems with mine and a few others' Garmin Oregon GPS units while loading some software upgrades. Well, that instability of some of the recent version 3.1x releases was somewhat frustrating, but they've now released a version 4, and to date that seems to be much more stable. If you have an Oregon, it would probably be a good idea to run Web Updater now on your GPS and update it. The Web Updater is a free download from the Garmin webpage. One of the features of this new version 4 software is the ability to work with an interesting new product from Garmin called Chirp. From reading the brochure info on their webpage, this seems to be a purpose-designed mini radio beacon targeting geocaching. It seems the idea is you buy one of these things and you program it up with your GPS using the wireless functions in many modern Garmin GPSs such as the Dakota, the GPS map 62 and 78, and the Oregon. Then you hide the weatherproof Chirp somewhere and list a puzzle cache pointing to the location. When other geocachers arrive near your location, they'll be alerted that the cache is nearby on their GPS and be able to access information you've loaded onto the Chirp, which may include a final waypoint, a hint, or some other detail. When you return next, the Chirp will then tell you how many visitors have been to your cache. Now this sounds like a heck of a lot of fun. I wonder who'll try this device first in Australia or New Zealand. I've had to put in a few technology caches myself, so I might have a crack at this one. The problem, of course, is that it seems this Chirp device will only work with caching seekers who are operating these specific models of Garmin GPS only, and that's a pretty serious restriction on who will search for or find your cache. Well, we'll look out and see if somebody puts up a listing. Now, speaking of puzzles, or mystery caches, as geocaching.com calls them, if you're keen on this type of hide, have a look at Hamilton City sometime. There are currently over 120 puzzle caches within 30k of my home, varying from simple logic puzzles to some very complex mind teasers. As with any hobby, there's a great variety of people participating in geocaching, and some of these, of course, take on these challenges with lots of gusto, but there's some others who get really frustrated with puzzles. One challenge that many of us like to put on yourself is clearing all the caches in one area around your home, up to a certain distance. But this comes pretty difficult when there's a high proportion of puzzles in your area. Another impact of this is that laying any sort of cache in this area becomes quite tricky. Unless you've solved all the puzzles in your area, you find the reviewer can decline to publish your hard-worked hide because you find out it's too close to the final of a puzzle that you've not yet solved. I've heard of a couple of instances, though, where a cacher was hiding a new cache and he found a box already in exactly the same spot you were going to use, and voila, they've solved a puzzle the easy way. So if puzzles are your thing, I'd definitely recommend a trip to Hamilton sometime, and you'll certainly be able to enjoy yourself. Puzzles are fun. Keep on laying them, you puzzle enthusiastic cache layers, but do make sure there's still a range of traditionals out there for new caches, or those without the time in the area or the background to get their heads around your ideas so they can go out and find something. A small group of cases here in Hamilton have decided we need to get the find count up a bit on some of these more difficult puzzles, and we've been meeting socially to share ideas and brainstorm some solutions on them. This has been both fun socially and particularly helpful for caching. It's surprising how often, within a group discussion on a seemingly impossible mystery, the discussion ends up with an aha moment. The outcome is that we then individually seek the hide in our own time, often sharing stories later of the difficulty experienced even in that last step with some of these puzzle finds. Okay, looking at the event calendar here in New Zealand, we've got the Wonder Stuff calling an event to celebrate spring, called the Wonder of Spring No. 3 in Albany on the 7th of November. SWAT has an event called So Long For Now and Thanks for the Caches down in Christchurch, also on the 7th of November. Plus there's the Ensemblage de Collage Paraparamu on the Kapiti Coast that I mentioned in the last podcast, coming up on the 14th of November. Christmas celebrations will start with Trampeted's Christmas Campaign in the Auckland Cornwall Park on the 12th of December and the Christmas Bun Fight in Crofton Downs, Wellington, on the 12th of December. So that's all from New Zealand at the moment. Back to you then, Darren.
Well, thanks for that update, Alan. And you've really touched on a topic that I wanted to get into on this episode too, and that's the Garmin Chirp, because there has been a lot of discussion about it in geocaching forums around the world. And, you know, a lot of people are coming up with conspiracy theories and innuendo about why Garmin released it and what's going on with Groundspeak and why didn't they announce it at the same time. And if you want to, get into it a little bit more, go to this great blog that I discovered just a few weeks ago called It's Not About the Numbers. And there's a post there from Cubby Rocks who has a post titled Garmin Chirp, Genius or Criminal. And I'll just read you a little bit of an excerpt from it. He writes, "Firstly, it appears that they went ahead and released this new toy without letting Groundspeak know about it. In my experience, there is only one reason why you do this. You know the company won't support it. But if the product is already in the marketplace, the geocachers are buying it and beginning to use it, it forces Groundspeak into supporting the innovation or facing the wrath of the technology-crazed geocachers. But the evil genius of the Chirp doesn't stop there. The most criminal aspect of the Chirp is the reliance it creates on Garmin GPSs." Well, you can find out more about that if you head to the It's Not About the Numbers blog, and I'll give you a link also in the show notes to follow that. Well, it's time now for the trivia question for GeoTalk, and this one's been prompted by Lloyd, known as Stage Tree, who I read out an email last episode, and he was actually asking about Verbis cache loggers, and he saw a topic in the geocaching forums about it, and I actually came across it only about a week ago. I came across a locationless cache, which is featured on GCA, which you could only log if you'd averaged, I think it was at least 60 words per log find, and I decided to check it out, and I'll reveal what my number was at the end of the podcast, but it's time for you now to put your thinking caps on and think about who are the most verbose loggers in Australia. So that is the caches that write the most when they're logging their finds. The answer to that at the end of the podcast. Geo Talk is headed down the south coast of New South Wales, and we're in the lovely township of Nowra, attending an event, the Geocaching New South Wales South Coast Invasion. And I'm here with the organiser of this event, Lucien Roux, also known as Justin. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Darren. Nice to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit about Nowra.
Well, Nowra's the actual hub of the south coast. It's the industrial and business centre for the outlying areas, both farming and manufacturing. It's probably about 35,000 people live here and work here. And it's not a great tourist spot, or it doesn't think of itself as a tourist spot. If you ask the tourist centre, they'll actually send you to all our lovely beaches that we have 20 minutes away. But it does actually have a lot to offer, and we feel that geocaching actually will take you to all those hidden little spots that only the locals know about.
Now, I was going to ask you, what is geocaching like here? Because you've been doing it for a few years down in this area.
We've been caching now for just over 4 years, and when we started, I think we had three local caches. And looking at the map last night to see what I've found, because it doesn't seem that there's that many, but there's actually well over 50. For people who haven't been this area, that's quite a few.
What's the style of geocache like down here? Because, I mean, it is a small town, and most of them out in the bush, or do you have a lot of sort of more urban cachings?
The vast majority of our caches are actually the classic bush hide. We do have an increasing number of urban micros, but they're very much in the minority at the moment. And as one of the earlier caches in the town, it was always my goal to actually hide what I like to find, and hopefully people would see those and hide the same sort of cache, and it's pretty much worked so far.
Most people we've spoken to before in the podcast who live in the sort of more regional towns of Australia find it a bit challenging geocaching, because caches get put out and then the locals find it and then they sit stagnant for a while. Is that something you find here?
Yes and no. A lot of the easier caches to find, and the ones that are close to the main roads, get fined with quite surprising regularity. One of my caches has been in place for about 18 months and is close on sort of 150 fines. One of my more remote caches probably has about four or five fines in the same time. Certainly as people pass through, they find one or two. Hopefully we'll get them to stay and find a few more. Certainly for geocaches, as the number of locals build up and start to find caches and then hide caches, as we'll become more cache rich and I guess more attractive to a geocaching tourist.
I was going to say, obviously you'd get a lot of people who are coming down to the beach for a weekend or for a holiday, so you'd probably see a lot of logs of people from other areas.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it is a great holiday destination, especially for short breaks for people from Sydney. We do have some absolutely beautiful caches, and discussions here this morning with a couple of other locals, I think we're going to try and start hiding in those caches in those places, just to keep everyone happy.
Yeah. And the reason for one of the reasons for today's event was to try and encourage people from Sydney and from other areas outside of Nowra to come in and do a bit of hunting in Nowra, for those who haven't been before. People from Canberra did it a few months ago. How successful was that? And do you think that's the sort of thing that regional towns like Nowra and maybe Dubbo and Wagga and Canberra and that need to encourage to get more out-of-towners in?
Yeah, I think we do. Certainly there's an excellent turn up here today. There's a few familiar faces who are actually at the Canberra invasion as well. They've felt there was enough here to offer them that they've come back for a second go at it. And I think invasion events, they build camaraderie amongst the people that actually go. They can be a lot of fun. Obviously for the town that's hosting, there is an influx of caches who may or may not stay overnight or for a weekend, so there's an economic benefit to the town, and at the end of the day it's just a whole lot of fun.
Alright, well look, Justin, thanks for joining us on Geo Talk, and thanks also for organising this great event.
Thank you, Darren.
Well, now it's time to quickly whip around the country and have a look at some of the events that are occurring in Australia. On the 30th of October is the Naruma Get-Together, which is happening down on the south coast of New South Wales. That's being held by Sol de Lune. And also on the 30th is the Fruilands Campspan, Spring Camping Victoria by Team Guzbuck. I think I've completely messed that up, but that's happening down in Victoria. On the 31st of October is Wibble's Weird Halloween Picnic. And on the 27th of November is the Geocaching New South Wales Parramatta Christmas Party, and that's being held in Sydney. If you've got an event that you want to feature, give us a call on the GeoTalk hotline on 02800 50436, or you can do what Maddie RX did and send it in via email. So it's time to have a listen to Maddie RX.
This is Maddie RX from Kyogle, New South Wales. I'd just like to plug an event that's to be held in Lismore in the north of the state on Saturday the 13th of November. The Northern Rivers 2010 Christmas Party will be held at 7:30 p.m. at Fire in the Belly restaurant. We welcome any geocachers that would like to attend and have a meal with the local crew. If you're interested in coming, have a look at GC2GCG8 and add your will attend log. Back to you, Spin Doc Bob.
Well, thanks, Matty RX, for sending that in. I really wish I was coming to that event, but I'm not even going to be in the country at that point in time. But look, I hope you get lots of people, and anyone who's in the Sydney region, I encourage you, just like we did when we headed down to Nowra, to head up to Lismore and get to that event. I just want to give a quick thank you to Carl at geostuff.com.au for donating prizes over the last few months to some of our competitions that we've held on the podcast. And anyone who's looking for any geocaching gear, whether it be cache containers or swag or stickers or hats or whatever, go to Carl's website at geostuff.com.au. Now, we don't have a competition for this particular episode, but fear not, you won't go away empty-handed. If you send in any audio or whether you send in some text to read out on the podcast, anyone who hasn't received a path tag in the past will send one out to you, a GeoTalk path tag. So all you have to do is just, you know, write up an email, and whether you post it in or record it, you can email it to geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or even easier, you can ring it up from your home phone or from your mobile phone and 02 800 50 436. That's 02 800 50 436, and you can send in a first to find or a milestone or just some general rant about geocaching in Australia and New Zealand, and we'll have a listen to some of those later in the podcast. Well, it's time now to catch up with Wayne and the crew over in Colorado and see how they're going finding that travel bug.
Hey Darren, it's Wayne from Colorado again. We found a good place to park. We've followed a four-wheel drive track up into the mountains. We've reached about 8,200 feet above sea level, which is about 2.5 kilometers above sea level. So we've in the quest for the BJC family travel bug from our friend Ben and his family in Brisbane. It is snowy up there. Grace is pointing out the mountains that we can see from here up in Rocky Mountain National Park have got a good layer of snow on them already. Even though it's only fall here, we were eager to get up to the mountains today, because as the weather gets worse, this four-wheel drive road that we've taken gets almost inaccessible. Actually, we'd probably not be able to get up here during the winter, so we wanted to do this before the season set in. The travel bug that we're after today has gone through quite an adventure. It started in Brisbane, as I told you, went to Massachusetts and California, and then back to the North Island of New Zealand before it came back stateside again here to Colorado. So a long 2.5-year journey has covered 27,378 miles or just over 44,000 kilometers in its life before we pick it up here today. We're about to leave the beaten path here and hike off into the woods. We're headed for the Devil's Own Cache, GCZT0Y. It's on a four-wheel drive road up a steep glacial valley in the Indian Peaks Wilderness near the southern edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. We've been in this area before doing some geocaching, but this one is very exciting. We're headed off into the trail now. We'll check back with you as we get closer to the cache.
Well, it's time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and our first email comes from Ian, also known as Steptoe. He says he just got back from attempting a new Where I Go cache called GC2GN02, Return the Balls. He says he's had an Oregon 450 for quite a while now, which obviously can play Where I Go cartridges, but he's been waiting for a chance to try it out, and finally one appeared close to home. So he dragged his wife and son out for a trip. He says they had a lot of more fun than they expected completing the challenge, which consisted of picking up balls and returning them to various playing fields around the park. Was well worth doing. And he says if you don't have a Where I Go player, you should borrow one sometime from someone who does and try out this cache. Even better, see if they'll come along as a guide for you. And he says it was great at the end of the day because he found the first to find. And I'd just like to point out to Steptoe that I was only 2 hours behind you in missing out that FTF, so thanks very much for beating me to it. Our next email comes from Mark, also known as Puddle Jumpers PJs. He says, "Hi guys, loving your podcast. I download them and play them on the iCube. Very cool." He said he sent in a first to find story a while ago and had a few good ones since. But recently, they were at about 474 caches, and they were planning to head out to Wagga for their 500th cache, which, of course, most locals will know that's the home of Australia's first and so far only mega event. He says they've been caching for 6 months now, and they believe that they will hit the 1,000 before their one-year anniversary in March, and they've also managed to cache in five states in just as many months. So they've only got three to go, if you include the territories, of course. Anyway, they want to give a heads up and say they released their first puzzle cache in Bungendore, and it's based on Sesame Street, and it goes by the code of GC2FY5H, and they said the theme of it is that Elmo and co, they all go to visit a lolly shop, and after they've eaten all the lollies, they decide they all run in different directions, and your job is to find the 10 runaways and piece together the coordinates in order to find Sesame Street. So they hope a lot of kids might, particularly from the Canberra region, will head down to Bungendore and try that cache. They also said that they love placing caches that put smiles on people's faces. And they've got another one called Polizia, which is GC2EKV0. It's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek cache, so check that out if you're ever in the area. That's in Bungendore down near Canberra. A bit of a shout out to Indiana Jill from Auckland. Indiana Jill sent me an email a few weeks ago saying that she was heading down to Sydney and Parramatta and Brisbane, so was in my neck of the woods for a while and was hoping to catch up. Unfortunately, the planets didn't align for us, and I'm sorry we missed out on catching up with each other, but hopefully we will maybe one day when I come over onto your side of the ditch. Anyway, a bit of a shout out there to Indiana Jill. And finally, another email from Craig, also known as Craig Jack, says, "Love listening to the podcast. Only came across it last month while they were trying to complete the mystery cache, which turned out to be those Axis of Evil caches that we had in episodes 31, 32, and 33. Anyway, they said they're relatively new to geocaching, and all they started last year. They had a baby born who was premature, and that put a bit of dampener on their caching. But now she's a little older, and they're all going out with all together as a family, and loving geocaching. Anyway, they said they also love doing the multis and the mysteries that have been created by Zitherin, and they say they get a huge sense of accomplishment whenever they complete them. Anyway, thanks for that, Craig, for sending that email. Well, we got two calls now that have come in on the GeoTalk hotline. The first one's from Craig from Lost Wanderers, and the next one from Covert Hypnosis and Splatum.
Hi, Spin Doc Bob. This is Craig from the Lost Wanderers. Just ringing up. We've just found our 200th cache, Legendary View by Mr. Zitherin. Really hard walk to get up there, especially pushing a pusher the whole way. Well, I'll tell a lie. We left the wife in the pusher about 100 metres from the GZ and went the rest of the way. So that's number 200 for us. Anyway, love listening to the podcast. Thanks very much. Bye.
Dear listeners, it's Vladimir Covert here. We're out on a new night cache, first to find hunt. This is home of Hops Hop the Roo by Philip. being quite a long case, we decided to come in a push bike that was advertised as 7Ks. Push bike seemed the right choice of transport for it. And we first arrived at the first waypoint and found 8 geocaches just down the road a little bit. Then we kept on going ahead. They actually saw our first on the hunt, and we found another 2 geocaches. So there's at least 10 geocaches who are now behind us. We've just arrived at GZ, or close to GZ, around about 20 metres away. We decided to set the tripod up, take a few pictures, and wait for the other teams to come and join us for a shared first to find.
Well, thanks very much to Covert Hypnosis and the Lost Wanderers. And before we go, we better check in with Wayne over in Colorado and see how him and the family went with finding that travel bug from Australia.
All right, here we are. We've located the cache. And it's a traditional ammo can. It feels good to find a good, solid ammo can cache here in the mountains. We'll see if we can pop it open. Go ahead.
Come on.
It's a little tough. Throw it down here.
Right there.
Hold that guy. Yep, just like that. There you go. All right, here we go.
We've opened it.
Pull it open.
And now what's inside?
Let's look. See. Is it in there?
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Some good stuff. Some good tradable items. I see the logbook. Oh, there it is. Look. That's it.
There's another one.
Yeah, there are lots of trackables. All right, excellent. So, Darren, it's success. We've successfully found the BJC family travel bug. All of our best to our friends Ben and Jenny and their family. So we'll retrieve it here, and we'll follow up with them and find out what's next for its adventures. Maybe we'll send it back to Australia to see them. Thanks.
Well, thank you to everyone who sent in to GeoTalk, whether email or phone. Don't forget, if you want to drop us a line, it's geotalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can phone it in on 02-800-50-436. Well, it's time now to give you the answer to the trivia question for this particular episode, and the question was, who are the most verbose vloggers in Australia? Now, the answer to the question is it's the Quiet Plotter from Victoria, who averages 165 words per log. Coming in second from the ACT is Super T with 159. In Queensland, we've got Loopy Lou with 130. The most verbose logger in Tasmania is Horace with 114. In Northern Territory, it's Reason Joe with 112. In South Australia, Team Stargazer with 111. And WA brings up the end with Mischief's Crew with 110. And I said I'd reveal what I had. I'm currently sitting on 56. So I've got a little bit of work to do, I think, in thanking people for finding for the caches that I find, a little bit more than a TFTC. Unfortunately, I didn't have the stats for New Zealand, but I'm sure if we give Radio Nut 50 a bit of a prod, we might find out next episode who are the most verbose caches in New Zealand. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. In our next episode, we're going to follow a pair of regulars as they attempt to find 10 different cache types all in one day. And we're going to go geocaching in the South Pacific. Until next time, safe geocaching.
We're going on a treasure hunt.
We're going on a treasure hunt.
We're going to catch a baby one.
We're going to catch a baby one.
We're not scared.
We're not scared.
What a beautiful day.
What a beautiful day.
Yay.